Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Well, speak of the devil.
The devil appears.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is season 4, episode 8, The Unusual Suspects. Mm. And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. We're so happy to have you here. We also want to tell all of you who are not yet in the Patreon, now's the time, because again with this episode 251 is dropping Friday, August 8th. Let's watch Courtney Thorne Smith and Francis X. McCarthy in Summer School. Who is Francis X. McCarthy? He's the guy who played Dr. Calvin Hobbes on Melrose Place, and he is also in Summer School alongside Courtney Thorne Smith, as I discovered when I watched it this week. And we just want to remind you, our membership drive is still going. We're still charging towards the sticker tier as we try to continue up the campaign and get to eventually doing short mini series runs on short run shows like Fatal Attraction, the Joshua Jackson version, Dying for Sex, Models Inc., the whole run, perhaps My So-Called Life. All of these shows could be covered on a full episode by episode basis, but we need you to join us. So get more information on that at againwiththispodcast.com/club. And if you've already joined, we're so happy to have you, and we'll see you on Friday for Summer School.
Indeed.
Now, our one and only plot is a Capeside High senior prank implicates a dog who deserves better. The dog is fine, by the way. It's just, you know, in an embarrassing situation. But before we get there, Molly's back in the previously. So I guess I spoke too soon on gay Jack the Uke soccer coach being accepted by the townsfolk back in the rave episode. Sadly, but we'll get there. When the episode proper starts, we're wandering the halls with no one we know until the camera zooms in on a kid who yells that everyone's got to see what they did to the swimming pool. Apparently, Capeside High has an indoor swimming pool we've never seen before. Sure, why not? Yes.
Natatorium.
Natatorium, thank you. For the Latin heads out there.
Calm down, Capeside High.
Everyone runs after this kid, and what they did to the swimming pool is get a sailboat in it with class of 2001 on the sail and a sweet golden doggy proudly sitting on the deck. Principal Peskin, whom we heard about for the first time in the previous episode and who is played by Harry Shearer, of all people, announces that what everyone is gawking at are his boat and dog. A couple of guys from the swim team jump into the pool and tow the boat to the edge. Jack is like, who could have done this? Dawson says he wishes he had thought of it. Joey drawls that she thinks his skills as a known prankster aren't at this level. Dawson's hair, by the way, looking the best it has all season. It's going to get worse as the episode goes on, but in this scene, pretty good. You can see it in the visual aids. The poor dog hops off the boat, barks once, and parks it at Jack's feet, looking up at him as adoringly as the elderly extra behind Jack, who you can also see in the visual aids, looks on. Peskin asks if Jack knows the dog, and Jack says he doesn't, but it sure looks suspect, unusually or otherwise. And after the credits, a couple of guys we don't know and who don't get any lines get called to Peskin's office along with Jack, Dawson, and Pacey. The other two guys are black, by the way, which is quite a choice.
Thank you.
For a show in which I think like 5 black actors ever have gotten lines so far.
Yeah, including a principal of the past. We miss him.
We do.
Jesus. Yeah, that was really poor choice. Mm-hmm. And I cannot believe that nobody was like, I don't know, maybe find one of Matt Caulfield's brothers.
Yes, exactly. But Peskin apparently rules out these other two guys immediately because then he's in his office with Pacey, Mitch sitting off to the side observing as Peskin says Pacey is one of the three suspects still in the mix and we're about to see the other two are, duh, credits cast members. Pacey claims not to know what crime Peskin is investigating, and we slide to Peskin and Mitch with Dawson, who hears from Mitch that while he doesn't think Dawson would do something like this, they have no choice but to bring him in for reasons we're not going to learn for several minutes. And when it's Jack's turn, he laughs that the dog fingered him. Okay, don't put it like that. Mitch yeah. tells Pacey they're on his side and Dawson that he had access to Mitch's keys to the school. Peskin says Pacey's use of the marina when the True Love was extant gave him access to the yacht club storage facility where Peskin's boat was. Not sure how, if what we heard was that Pacey was basically squatting in slips and did not have legitimate access, but it turns out to be true. And Peskin tells Jack that Chester, the dog, was taken sometime between 8 and noon when Mrs. Peskin realized he was gone. So Jack just has to tell them where he was during that time. So we zoom in on Jack's eye and then out to him with a little bouquet, yelling through the screen door and then pressing his face against it to Jen at what is apparently an unpleasantly early hour, but not so early that she hasn't done her hair because it looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The flowers are for Grams, and he has something better for Jen. He got permission for her to help him with the soccer team for her community service hours. Jen thinks she's more qualified to pick up trash, but Jack has been struggling with the team since Andy left. The parents suck, and his star goalie broke his leg jumping off the roof. Jack will be back at 12:45 sharp to pick her up. He has to go meet Drew at the hardware store for what he calls, quote, a karma thing, end quote. And then with Pacey, he tells the story of what he did yesterday. We join him making out with Joey outside the sheriff's station before she exposa roasts him. Clip two.
Pacey, for 5 years, your brother's been nagging you about spending a day with him observing police policies, and you've always told him to just stick it. Then you take some meaningless career aptitude test, and suddenly you're watching the lost episodes of Cop Rock and taking him up on his dubious offer.
Well, don't you think I'd look sexy in a uniform?
Inside. Point.
Well, I don't think so at all.
I don't either. And also, Cop Rock drive-by. Okay, show. I see you.
I'll also say this is how you can tell it's the past, because present-day Joey would probably say absolutely not to the uniform, but that's when Doug comes out of the building and Joey says she'll pray for Pacey. There are also some gay jokes, but I skip them. Then Mitch is remembering that when he got up the previous morning, Dawson wasn't there. Cut to Gail dropping Dawson off at Mr. Brooks's house and both Learys discussing Dawson having lost Mitch's keys. Mr. Brooks has summoned Dawson to clean out his study, something Dawson clearly isn't qualified to do since he doesn't know what anything is or what is important, besides which he says he's worked off his boat debt, so if Mr. Brooks wants him to do this, he'll have to pay now. Mr. Brooks refuses, so Dawson calls his bluff and starts to leave, and Mr. Brooks says he'll pay Dawson what he's worth, very little. Even as an oral contract, that sucks. Like, unless you need this as an alibi, and I guess you do, but like, figure out something else. This also just came up. Like, it can't have been part of the plan.
Mm.
Jack tells the administrators he was doing a project with Drew, and we see them at the hardware store as Jack sends Drew to get paint while Jack goes for net for the soccer goal. Doug's first stop with Pacey is at the donut shop, of course, but Doug claims there's more police work coming than any episode of Cops could teach him. Over to Dawson, going through Mr. Brooks's hoarded study, including his old high school yearbook. Clip three.
Arthur Isaac Brooks. The newspaper, track and field, aspiration to become a great Hollywood filmmaker. Oh my God.
Yes, other people have dreams as well, dude. Then Mitch snaps us back to the present with a mention of Dawson's infamous ninth grade senior pact, which seems like a contradiction in terms. Peskin is interested. So, clip four.
When I was in ninth grade, the seniors pulled a particularly lame prank. I think they graffitied the lockers and trashed the parking lot or something. It was embarrassing. And Pacey and I made a pact that when our time came, we would do it right. The prank to end all pranks. We talked about it for years.
So it was you?
No, it wasn't me. In case you haven't noticed, Pacey and I aren't exactly Butch and Sundance these days. I don't even remember the pact until you...
Well, what is it?
I can tell you I didn't do it. I can't speak for Pacey.
Okay, Narc. This is part of the plan, spoiler. After the commercials, Jack is sweating and pounding water as Mitch quizzes him on his timeline. And we see Jack at the soccer field with Jen, who tangles herself in the net and falls as soon as Jack's back is turned. There is a gif of this, obviously. It's in the visual aids. Jack ignores this and calls Molly over to offer her the goalie position, which she declines in favor of her current lower profile position, left halfback. Jen sees herself in Molly, guessing that Molly's avoiding potential glory as well as embarrassment, but thinks Molly might change her mind if she gets really pissed off. Back to Pacey, apparently the only senior who had access to the warehouse during the time window in which the boat was taken. We see him sitting next to Doug, who's holding up a radar gun. Pacey wonders if Doug ever finds himself sitting out there confirming that the few vehicles that pass are not speeding, and wonders if he's wasting his life as Capeside's Barney Fife. And this seems to land so hard that Pacey actually backs off, seeming to feel bad.
Yeah.
By 12:30, Dawson says he was more than ready to get out of Mr. Brooks's place, and we see Gretchen pull up in Gail's car. Dawson apparently wasn't going to bother telling Mr. Brooks he was leaving, and Mr. Brooks has to stop him at the car to say that if he's not back in 3 hours, he's not getting paid whatever amount Mr. Brooks still hasn't promised, by the way. And then as the kids on the soccer team just sit around, which we're supposed to think they're doing for the 2 hours between practice and a game, which are happening on the same day. Like, do parents not have jobs in this town? What the fuck?
Yeah. And what day of the week even is? It seems like a mega weekend day.
Right.
But also, like, this is not how children's sports work.
No.
I'm begging anyone in that writer's room all these years ago to go outdoors and interview the parent of a grade schooler. This is not how things are.
No, you get at most an hour of focus from these kids, if that. I mean, that's actually probably high. Like, none of this is accurate, but whatever. Jack calls Molly over, and clip 5.
You get any orange wedges?
One. Billy takes the other one, smashed it into the ground.
Yeah, Billy's a jerk.
Just wait until I'm 17 and hot. He'll regret messing with me.
No.
Yuck. No.
Yeah, what kind of fucking Paris Hilton forward philosophy is that, youngin? Come on.
And, like, 10-year-olds don't think like this.
No.
In my experience. But mostly just yuck.
Yeah, barf.
Jack says guys like Billy won't respect you unless you make them. Molly has to prove to herself that she is just as good as they are. So she decides to play goalie after all, but makes sure Jack knows she knows how he got her to change her mind. When Gretchen drops Dawson off at home, Drew is waiting. Clip 6.
Whenever I see that guy, I can't help but hearing the Darth Vader theme.
Okay, it's can't help hearing or can't but hear. It's definitely not what she just said, which is
no
kind of grammar.
And it's the Imperial March.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you. And maybe the Benny Hill theme. Like, I mean, I get that Drew's kind of supposed to be a bad guy, but Darth Vader is, no, not touching the hem of that cape.
It's called Yakety Saxer.
Our listeners may not know that. Moving on, Dawson.
It was the original theme for Darth Vader. It didn't work. That's why we have the Imperial March.
Dawson claims he's making an effort with Drew as a karmic decision.
Apology accepted, Captain Eda.
I'm done.
Congratulations to Andor on its many Emmy nominations. That's when we're recording this. When Dawson gets out, we learn he was not expecting Drew, who is mainly there for some exposition. Clip 7.
First, I just wanted to extend my gratitude for last night.
Well, no. We met at the movie theater. Common decency dictates and lend you $5 for popcorn. Ask you to sit with Nate Berger afterwards was your idea.
Small to you, but significant to me. I'm just grateful to finally find at least one ally in this strange and eclectic Hamlet. Maybe my first.
Well, I appreciate the thought, but you didn't have to come all the way down here just to tell me that.
You're right. That's not why I'm here. Lift these in my car, man.
Ah! Huh. Thank you. I just saved me from like a solid hour of paternal lecturing.
It was the least I can do. And as I said, you know, you reached out to the new kid. What goes around comes around.
That is so true.
Okay, going back over it, it's like, wait, who was in his car at what time?
Right.
Because this doesn't totally line up, but I try not to nitpick this part of it, like the timeline construction part of the plan too much, because this is corny, and the way that they're doing this is really like, didn't we just do a whodunit noir-y shot thing like not even two seasons ago?
Mm-hmm.
But they keep the line moving. It's paced pretty well. However, eclectic Hamlet?
Yeah.
What?
Well, I'll have some critiques on this, but we'll get back to it.
Mm.
Over to Doug and Pacey on a charming street in town in pursuit of a very important dog that did not just run away, but was definitely stolen based on footprints in the dirt. Pacey asks if this is what Doug meant when he said what they were going to do with rival cops. And when Doug droops again, Pacey asks if this is about his wasting your life crack, because Pacey only kind of meant it. Doug very intensely says that if Pacey ever cares about anything as much as Doug cares about being a cop in Capeside, Doug will be shocked. Which, Doug, that is so sad for you. But he goes on. Pacey's also never going to be as good at anything as Doug is at this. And that's not all. Clip 8.
If you ever in your life presume to judge me again, so help me God, I will beat the ugly right out of you.
Whoa! Too far! Oh my God! Doug has never been this guy before. That is such a very out of character line. Oh my God.
It didn't bother me.
Oh,
I don't,
wow.
No, I okay. just, I mean, you know, like, it didn't seem like, it didn't seem like an empty threat. It didn't seem like something that had maybe not happened before. Like, brother shit is like, like, I don't get involved. So that didn't strike me as that much of an escalation for Doug, so much as that it was like, at least he put his foot down about something with Pacey.
I don't know. That seemed really intense to me, especially for this show. It was like, too much. This is not what you expect from Doug. This is what we expect from his shitty dad. And like,
well, yeah. I don't know. I guess I didn't read it as like the show thinking it was that serious, because it doesn't really take Doug that seriously, to its detriment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's too much, but it's not like he does it. So.
Right. In the present, Peskin puts together that Pacey and Doug were looking for his very dog, the one Pacey's now accused of taking. Pacey ignores that and appeals to Mitch. Surely he can't believe that Pacey has anything to do with this fiasco. So why are they still here? Peskin says that a new detail requires them all to account for their whereabouts yesterday, and off a pointed nod from Mitch, Pacey sighs deeply and guesses they mean the pact, which was apparently Pacey's idea, but he wonders, did it occur to them that his now ex-friend pointed them toward Pacey to divert attention from himself? Peskin claims that justice is blind. If Dawson is responsible, they will nail him just like they'll nail Pacey.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
After commercials, the interrogation has gone on so long that Dawson has had to get a haircut and his old bad hair is back. You can see this on visual aids. It looks crazy. Peskin says the incursion into the school happened after 5:30 when the cleaning crew came home. And again, to what day is this? All the kids doing yesterday's various activities at all hours of the day, starting quite early, yet coming to school for the day we are watching, made me assume this is Monday. The day of the prank was Sunday. So would the cleaning crew even be there to clean a school that probably didn't get very dirty over the weekend? Mini day, maxi weekend. No idea what time is when.
Yeah.
There were no signs of forced entry implying that it was an inside job. Dawson reminds Mitch that he saw Dawson at home the previous night, and Mitch says that was at 10 p.m. If Dawson will just tell them where he was for the 5 hours before that, they'll be done. But Peskin is not stopping until he's got his man. So we watch past Dawson return to Mr. Brooks's house and enter without knocking. And so this is my problem. What did he go home for other than what was presented as an unplanned encounter with Drew? Nothing we saw tells us what made him think Drew would just show up there at that time without a plan having been made. Like, none of that has been established. It's not like, oh, hey, yeah, thanks for bringing the keys by, as if Drew had called. He's like surprised to see him. So
that he went all the way back to Mr. Brooks's to give a speech about his own stick-to-itiveness, which is right, like, not a positive.
Mm-hmm.
at least that tracks with Dawson just Dawsoning.
Right.
Thinking he's the center of the universe, but like the whole reason that he had to leave to contrive this meetup with Drew doesn't work either.
Right.
And also, when are we?
Right.
Like, really?
So, yes, Dawson has been gone more than 3 hours because Mr. Brooks summarily fires him. And for some reason, Dawson pushes back on losing this job that he did not seek or want. Clip 9.
On what grounds?
You're not playing fussy with your floozy when you're supposed to be doing a job. I guess I forgot. You're just a hormonal adolescent.
What do you possibly hope to gain by insulting my friend?
I don't give a damn about you or your lady, but I do care about having my generosity taken advantage of.
Look, just because you are alone and your life is full of abandoned dreams does not give you the license to inflict your pain on me.
How dare you presume to understand me, who I am, where I've been, what I've done? Now get the hell out of here.
Fine.
Okay. Like, yeah. This is what you both want,
right.
And for reasons that we will really find out about in the next episode, like, their parallels are quite contrived, but mm-hmm. It's like, okay, if he's just your alibi, then why are you being a bitch about it?
Right, and it is still light out when Dawson stomps off, so still a few hours to account for. In the present, Peskin says Jack can go home as soon as he says where he was between 5:30 last night and 8 this morning, which Mitch cuts back to just last night. And wearily, Jack says they had their first playoff soccer game, and we go there. Jen is helping a kid with his guards when she spots a pack of dads coming over. The alpha's name is Gus Wiener. He's played by David Andrews, forever known to me as the guy we found out in the first season of House of Cards had sex with Frank Underwood when they were both in high school.
Mm-hmm.
He's also got crazy eyebrows, which you can see in the visual aids.
It's so funny to me. Like, this is actually really good casting. He's that kind of like lipless wasp mm-hmm. guy that does this kind of thing with youth sports. Having been a little league umpire, that guy was like everyone I had contact with practically. But then like the George Whipple eyebrows are deranged and completely undercut. Like, you can't take him seriously. And I find it very difficult that Jack, standing a foot from him and being a head taller than him too, not for
that
nothing,
mm-hmm.
is looking at this absolute brow ledge that has like prisoners of war that don't know Vietnam is over.
Yep.
Really? That guy? And hey, hair and makeup, maybe a flowby,
maybe
help your boy out.
Just a little trim. So yes, Gus and the dads form an inappropriately tight circle around Jack as Gus asks him to deny the rumor they've heard that he's going to put Molly in goal. Jack confirms it. Gus says they can't allow that. Jack says they don't have to because it's his call. Gus reminds Jack that they all graciously let Jack keep coaching even after they found out he's gay. But if he puts Molly in goal and the team loses, Jack will lose his job. But Jack does not back down. Back to Pacey. Having not found the dog, Doug has made Pacey sit in the back of the cop car and left him there while Doug went to do something Pacey thinks is gay, I guess. But when he comes back, it's with some guy named Mike, who sits in the front, and a bag of groceries. And when Doug stops at Mike's house, Mike pulls a folding white cane out of his pocket. Doug carries his groceries up to the door for him and shakes his hand goodbye. And this is kind of infantilizing to blind people, by the way. Presumably this small walkable town is fine for a guy who has one bag of groceries to navigate. But mm-hmm. Pacey is still moved by Doug's gentle goodness, which was, of course, the point. Dawson returns to Mr. Brooks's house an hour later, we are told. It is somehow still bright light out after 6 in November in Massachusetts.
Thank you. Thank you. Jesus.
Mr. Brooks is sitting in the study now, and Dawson tells him what he read in Mr. Brooks's yearbook earlier and what a coincidence it is. Reading it scared the hell out of Dawson, who never wants to be the kind of person who pushes everyone away and ends up alone like Mr. Brooks has. Dawson says he knows Mr. Brooks doesn't want to be alone either, and he can't get rid of Dawson the way he has everyone else in his life. So he's back to finish the job he was hired to do, and Mr. Brooks doesn't stop him. And then we return to the soccer game as Molly stops a ball and the team wins a game. This is, again, supposed to be after 6 in November. This light is like 2:30 p.m. in early September, maybe. As Molly and her sister Caroline, presumably less horny for Jack now, celebrate, Gus and just one dad return to hassle Jack. If a future game is tied, goals scored against them in previous games, like the three Molly let in today, will be used to break the tie. And I would love to believe this portrayal of parents getting insanely invested in preteen athletics is over the top, but I'm sure it's not. And that is depressing.
Nope. My notes read, most realistic shit the show has done so far.
Jack says that in that case, he'll just have to make sure they win against the Falcons on Wednesday. But Gus says that won't happen because Jack is no longer the coach of this team. And Molly, hearing all of this, bursts into tears and runs off. And Jen is appalled. And I guess someone was really happy they got a camera dolly today, because then we watched the scene end for like 10 minutes. You can see this in the visual aids. The camera pulling back and just like hanging out over the field for no reason. Okay. And then, a little after 9, when it is finally dark out, Doug and Pacey answer a call to the boatyard. All Doug can do is shine his flashlight through a chain-link fence, but when Pacey enters the code, Doug does walk in. Drew comes out from behind a boat with his hands up. Drew, like the police, also got an anonymous call about the missing boat, or rather, Mrs. Valentine did, and she sent him there. Doug says the anonymous call to the cops was 20 minutes before Drew's, and misuses the phrase, begs the question as he wonders how he's supposed to know Drew didn't take the boat. Drew laughs that there's obviously no boat on him, though Doug can frisk him. Drew suspects Doug might like that. Oh, great. Everyone's doing it. Doug, seething, lowers his flashlight, and Drew says he's going to take off. Pacey says he'll go too, and since Doug can't leave, Pacey will just get a ride with Drew. Doug reminds Pacey and new viewers that Pacey hates Drew, but Pacey says it's just a ride home and he's trying to be a better person, just like Doug. It's a karma thing. That's the third time we've heard someone say that about spending time with Drew. Crazy. What a crazy coincidence. And in the present, Peskin asks where they went next. Drew just dropped Pacey at home and Pacey went straight to sleep. Peskin releases Pacey, who hesitates long enough for Peskin to ask if there's something else. Pacey says he doesn't think Dawson did it either. Clip 10.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking that, honestly, I don't think Dawson did it either.
Why is that?
Yeah, that guy's way too respectable to pull off that type of crime. At least not without my coaxing, you know? Just not that type of guy.
Pacey might be cocky, but he's not an idiot. I mean, there's no way he would jeopardize his academic foothold for what was hardly the prank to end all pranks.
Okay, thanks.
Well, Dave, satisfied?
Yes, Mitchell, I am. I'm very satisfied indeed, considering that I know who did it.
Really?
Obviously. Well, it's clear you don't watch Inspector Poirot on A&E.
That's so random.
Just the on A&E part.
I know.
Just perfect. No notes.
And after the last commercial break, we find out whom Capeside's Inspector Poirot has accused. Drew! Mrs. Valentine is predictably incensed, so Peskin walks her through it. Clip 11.
At 10:30 yesterday, your son was in Harry's hardware store purchasing a canister of white paint, identical to the kind that was used to scrawl the words Class of 2001 on the sail of my boat. At 1:30, he was at the Leary residence returning Mitch's keys, keys that could easily have been copied earlier that day at the hardware store, giving Drew access to my school. At 9:30, he made one final appearance, this time at the storage warehouse behind the yacht club, under the pretense of having received an anonymous phone call. Your son was conveniently present at all the necessary moments. He acquired the means and resources to do the job, and he had the time to pull it all off without a hitch. Anything I left out, Mitch? Hey, that rhymes.
No, I think you've got it pretty much in the bag.
You conniving brat. I should have known after last year's ferret incident.
That really made me laugh.
Yeah, me too. So good.
No more explanation of the ferret incident. It's just a great non sequitur joke. I love it.
Yep.
She is so funny on this show. Mrs. Valentine offers a week's suspension. Peskin says it's going to be 2 and probation for the rest of the year. Drew just laughs, getting a smack on the back of the neck from Mrs. Valentine for his troubles. And in the hall, Drew's packing his bag and Mrs. Valentine's waiting when Joey comes around the corner. Drew, calling her Harry Potter, asks her to give the boys a message for him. He admires the brilliance of their design, or actually just touche. Clip 12.
Which boys? What happened?
Karma. Finally caught up with me.
No, oh, so it did.
Yeah.
So elsewhere, when Pacey walks up to the cop shop, Pacey's waiting outside with a box of inferior supermarket Krispy Kreme donuts, which are so sweaty. The box, you can see them in the visual aids. They are, you
yeah.
know, I'm never going to turn down a Krispy Kreme, but these are not the ones you want.
Those were sitting at Crafty for a while, for sure.
For sure. Pacey wanted to thank Doug for the ride along, which he found illuminating. Doug thinks he's being sarcastic, but Pacey is admitting he was wrong. What Doug does matters more than any job Pacey will ever get. Which, like, because you saw him do one guy a favor, he's still a cop. A, and B, you can be helpful to people who need it for whatever reason as a civilian. Anyway, Doug snits that yesterday Pacey didn't think it mattered at all, but Pacey says now he thinks it does. It matters to Mike, to whatever kid he prevents from killing his friends in a car wreck when Doug pulls him over for speeding. And it probably matters in lots of other ways that someone as insensitive as Pacey will never know about. Doug says that if it wasn't him doing the job, it would just be someone else, which true would probably be your abusive bigot of a father. So I guess I must reluctantly thank you for your service, Doug. Pacey says he should be so lucky as to ride shotgun with Doug someday. Doug doesn't think Pacey's cut out to be a cop, though. Clip 13.
Pacey, I think that you're a daring original. I think you have a talent for flying in the face of conventionality. And I think that you were born to break the rules, not enforce them. And you know what? I actually admire that in you. I really do.
What? Did my big brother, Doug, just admit that he admired me for the first time ever?
No, it's more like I'm just terrified at the thought of having to sit in that squad car with you for another minute.
And now I'm going to hug the ugly into you. Just kidding, that's not what he says. But they do make peace. Then Gretchen, back in the purple paisley uniform blouse, is stopping by what I guess is the back office at the restaurant where Dawson is working on a computer with a newfangled, nearly flat monitor. There's no like whole back to it when we see it in profile. Change has come to Capeside. Dawson is on the World Wide Web trying to find evidence of Mr. Brooks's film career. There's nothing under his first and last given names, but Gretchen suggests he might have used a different one. No, not Artie. But when Dawson tries AI Brooks, unfortunate initials in 2025, he finds 9 credits from the 50s and a bio that says his first film, which he made at age 23, catapulted him into the Hollywood elite. And there's a Christoph Mullen reference. I think we're the only ones who know who Mullen is, but you weren't so sure.
I mean, yeah, he wrote the back page quote humor unquote column, I guess.
Yeah, Jim Mullen's hot sheet.
Yes, Jim Mullen's hot sheet. Yeah, we made a whole game out of it on Television Without Pity and still are playing it on our sister podcast, Extra Hot Great. Check it out. It's pretty funny. But yeah, just like hacky observations about pop culture from a guy who probably did not even have the World Wide Web. And I just cannot think that that was a coincidence, that was that name, because they're never a coincidence and they're always that kind of clumsy. So
maybe
also they're using every single font on this webpage.
Yeah, they are.
All of them.
That was the style at the time,
I guess.
Then Jack is opening his door to Caroline. She has brought over a weeping Molly to apologize for having gotten Jack fired. She heard Gus, whose child is apparently Billy, the orange wedge vandal, yelling at Jack. And then today at school, Billy blamed her for Jack's firing because she didn't stop more goals. Drone strike the Wiener house, by the way. But anyway, Jack tells her it's okay. Clip 14.
They fired me because they disagreed with who I am.
They don't disagree. It's not a matter of opinion. They disapprove. Let's at least use the right words when we're talking about this fucking horseshit. Not that Jack makes it about his sexuality to Molly. He adds that they disagree with who he is as a coach, not with her as a player. They know he was right about Molly. They just couldn't admit it. Molly blubbers that Caroline said it wasn't her fault, but Molly couldn't believe her because she didn't know how anyone could fire Jack. Jack says he's confusing to people like Gus, but that you can't hate people because they're different. You have to try to forget about them and be the best person you can be. You can still hate people. At the Leary house, Mitch tells Joey he's not sure if Dawson's home. Weird, but she can check his room. If he is there, she can tell him Mitch knows and congrats. And this makes Joey run up there and open the door without knocking, just in time to catch Dawson jerking it. Just kidding. He's dropping prank evidence into a trash bag.
Oh, my, Dora.
The face he's holding. I'm just saying, people are bursting through doors a lot on this show. Fucking knock. That's what they're for.
I'm so upset. I take your point, but Dawson jerking it. Well, not a sentence. I need it. You know, my ear holes.
He's lonely. She demands forever an explanation just ahead of Jack slithering through the window, complaining about how hard it is to do without a ladder. Jack is surprised to see Joey there. Clip 15.
I thought that we were supposed to be doing this alone.
I knew it. The three of you. You did it, didn't you? You guys put the boat in the pool. You did it.
Just calm down for a second. There's no reason to jump to silly conclusions.
No, we didn't pull the prank.
Oh.
We have airtight alibis.
And besides, we all know Drew did it.
On the other hand, if we had wanted to pull off the prank, the three of us, that is,
Jack could have swung by the Peskin sometime after he met up with Drew at the hardware store. He would have had time to leave the paint he accidentally took home and Chester the dog with the necessary food and water, of course, tied up to Tree at a rendezvous point. I could have gotten in the storage facility sometime after 1:30 when Drew dropped off the keys, and before 3:30 when I had to get back to Mr. Brooks' house. Basie would have given me the code. And I would have had the Mitchmobile to tow the trailer back to the same rendezvous point Jack had been to earlier. I then would have left the boat and the car with Chester and the paint. Later on, Pacey could have asked Drew to drop him off somewhere near the rendezvous point. And once arriving at the location, Pacey could have gathered up all the essential materials and then taken the whole production into the pool at the gymnasium to finish off the job. And by 11, we'd be done, and everyone would still be none the wiser. Of course, that's only hypothetical.
Okay, it took me truly until now. I am famously from the prairies. I am not a person of boat. I don't know about boat shit. And it took me until now to realize, like, oh, I guess the mast, like, maybe it comes off. Like, it seemed like a more impressive prank to me before I realized, like, okay, yeah, you can just break it down, carry it through a door. Like,
yeah, I think you can detach it. But yeah,
this all makes the prank less impressive to me. But whatever, they're not done. Clip 16.
The truth is that Drew Valentine is, was, and will always be the lone arch criminal behind it all. I mean, I, for one, am glad to see that this kid finally got what was coming to him for so long.
Karma.
Exactly.
Okay, but the episode is called The Unusual Suspects. It is obviously a noir riff. If the title made you think there was going to be a reveal that none of them saw Drew at all and completely manufactured the circumstantial evidence, which they could have... No, the show is just doing a general noir thing and not a specific reference to the movie, nor to the movie its title is a reference to. So neat, whatever.
Well, or round up the usual suspects from Casablanca makes a little more sense, actually, because it's like the Dawson, I guess. I hesitate to compare Dawson to a Humphrey Bogart character, but here we all are through no fault of our own. Mm-hmm. Has to sort of watch his, you know, one true love go off with some other guy. And so, but there's really no reference to that part of it either, except in this last scene that we're about to talk about. But it's just like, what are some phrases that have suspects in it? I guess we'll pick the first one and not care if it maps onto it.
Right. And then we're in the fucking woods or whatever as Pacey digs a hole and Dawson drops a bag of evidence in it, which, like, seems extreme. Like, the case is closed. Just take it to the dump. You don't have to be this weird about it. But
yeah, also you're surrounded by fucking water on quote Cape, quote Cod.
Right.
Steal another boat, go out into the bay and dump it. Or go to the dump. You're right. Who cares?
Pacey thinks they got away with it, but also clip 17.
Thinking that something's been right tonight that hasn't been right for a long, long time. I just keep on forgetting why we're not still friends.
No, it's not that simple.
Of course not. It's just that...
I know.
I gotta tell you, Dawson. When you told me you'd never be able to trust me again, that was probably amongst the top five worst moments of my life.
When I walked out on my back porch and saw you and Joey, that was my worst. Number one with a bullet.
Do you think it's possible that someday I could convince you that maybe I'm the type of person that you could trust again?
I would like to believe that it is.
I gotta try. So I'm not ready to give up on you.
Doesn't work out. Could always just kill each other.
Or one of you could kill
you
the
first,
other.
First, Pacey.
Jinx. And that's the episode. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Dog.
The ferret. I hope it's okay.
Least valuable player. Whoever's job it was to track this plot, because it did not link up, in my opinion.
No, I'm not going to pick that because they, like I said, at least paced it well and sure. Sort of gave everybody some nice stuff to do and covered pretty well for the fact that Joey and Jen were like, I don't know, at a spa or mm-hmm. something. So, yeah, Gus. And his giant eyebrows.
Gus's
Fuck
eyebrows.
Off, bro.
Yeah. Hair and makeup also.
Really. Yeah, really. Next time and again with this, Jen makes a decision about college. Dawson makes Mr. Brooks's past about himself. Mr. Brooks and Grams might make out. And Pacey makes an impression on the Dean of Worthington College. I make a mean Maylock tail, and you should get my recipe before you look at our visual aids. We do those for every single episode of the podcast, and you'll find them, along with the episodes themselves, on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm Inspector Poirot superfan Sarah D. Bunting. I am on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is reluctant but effective goalie Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer David T. Cole can't help hearing the Darth Vader theme. Talk to you next time.
You want your bun toasted?
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. livewithchampion.com.